Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Starbucks MO on fighting unions. Give raises to those not on board. Here's the problem with that. It's illegal. UAW members, in the meantime, strike in Wisconsin. And today on the show, the president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO and later on, Senator Sherrod Brown. Welcome to the Thursday, May 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We're going to start things off on the show today with Bernie Burnham. Bernie is the president of the Minnesota State Labor Federation. She was sworn in earlier this year as the 10th president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. And as a Pacific Islander, Bernie is the first person of color to lead that federation. She is also only the second woman to hold the position. She was elected unanimously and succeeded outgoing President Bill McCarthy, who began his tenure as president back in 2015. A little background on Bernie. Prior to the election, she served as vice president of Education Minnesota, which is affiliated with both the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association. There's a lot of unions that have affiliation to both. Before that, she worked for 14 years as an elementary school teacher in Duluth, where she served 5 years as president of the Duluth Federation of Teachers. Bernie said, becoming president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO is the next step in a journey that began 22 years ago for me. When I was hired as a teacher in Duluth, Duluth Public Schools, I was a woman of color who took an unconventional route into the teaching profession. I didn't know I'd be accepted, but my new union family embraced me. And it's an honor and a privilege to be elected to this office, and she says she is committed to continuing the labor movement's fight for a state where everyone earns a fair return on their work, where every child can pursue their dreams, and where every family that's struggling today will get what they need. Things like accessible health care, modern roads and bridges, safe housing, world-class schools. Pretty much says it all, doesn't it? A couple things we're going to get into. Of course, the organizing that's going on in Minnesota alone has seen a lot of that. Bookstore workers, Starbucks workers, brewery and distillery workers. We'll touch on that. The other issue is essential pay, heroes pay, as it's been referred to. And prior to her coming into office, there was a push to get like $1,500 for people that were on the front lines during the pandemic. They got some pushback from the GOP legislature, and that was whittled down to about $750. Still better than nothing, though. Still better than nothing. And the other issue we're going to get into, getting people that are in their unions involved in politics. And I've talked about this on the show many, many times. And Bernie points out, we have seen firsthand the importance of having a governor like Tim Walz, someone who knows what union members and all working people face. Patterned after New Jersey AFL-CIO's excellent program, we are building a union member candidate program from the ground up. We are recruiting union members to run for municipal offices, for school board, for state legislature seats. We piloted the program 2 years ago with great success, and she's going to talk about that success. So this is exciting. Minnesota State Federation, pretty much a union-friendly state. They've got a pushback with some lawmakers, which is par for the course in many parts of America today. But they're moving the needle in the right direction. I often say that on the show, and it's good to say that on the show. Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us later in the broadcast and podcast, and he was at that big rally in Lorain, Ohio on Monday, and that all had to do with the possibility of locating what's called a dry dock where subs and ships would be repaired in Lorain, Ohio. Big turnout there, and we talked to Tim Berg on the show on Tuesday this week, and the question is, what will it take to get this across the finish line? Right now, it's my understanding that the Navy is just dragging its feet on it. There's some concern that there might need to be another bid on this. Right now, nobody else is bidding on it, so I don't know. But we'll see what Senator Brown has to say about that. The other issue, and this is one that we have been on top of for quite some time, privatization of the VA. Last week, Senator Brown hosted Veteran Affairs Secretary Dennis McDonough at the Chillicothe, Ohio VA Medical Center for roundtable discussions with vets and employees, trying to figure out what's going to happen with that facility. Now, there's this recommendation. It's called the AIR Commission, which stands for Asset and Infrastructure Review. And this goes back several years. And this commission determined that Chillicothe is one of several VA medical centers that should shut its doors. So where does that leave our vets, right? And this is part of a bigger scheme that we have addressed on this show. The American Federation of Government Employees, who is one of our national sponsors, has been on this issue for a number of years. And there is a push to privatize. It's across the board. And you have to ask the question, again, what's going to happen to our vet? How far do they have to travel for medical care? Big question. If we have time, we'll get into student loans. There's been some discussion that Biden is going to forgive a certain amount. I'm hearing $10,000. I'm hearing $50,000. I don't know. Right now, student loan debt in America is more than regular credit card debt. Isn't that crazy? I mean, credit card debt is astronomical. Student loan debt is even more. You've got families 20, 25, 30 years out that are still paying off their student loans because of the cost of education. That's the driving force on all of that. So Senator Brown will be joining us to button up the show later today. Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz announced this week raises and expanded training for employees, except for those at unionized stores. And, of course, stores that have petitioned the National Labor Relations Board for an election. Well, guess what? Workers United has filed an unfair labor practice charge against the company. Why? Because not offering those benefits to unionized stores may violate the company's obligation to bargain in good faith. And for those stores seeking to unionize, it is, quote, hard to see how this is much different in practice than saying drop the union campaign and you'll get this wage increase and better benefits, which would be clearly illegal. But you know how it goes. Doesn't matter if it's legal or illegal. They'll keep pushing the envelope and delay. Justice delayed is justice denied. This will definitely end up in the NLRB. In the Boston metro area, independent coffee shops are also seeking a wave of union activity. Over 15 independent coffee shops have unionized in the area in the past year. Workers are represented by Unite Here. According to, how about this name? Lip Maneggio. That's right. His first name is Lip. Lip Maneggio, a barista at the 1369 Coffee House, where workers are seeking voluntary recognition. Even the best management is still management. And having support and structure and accountability, the things a union can provide, is very important. He also says having the support of Unite Here and having other independent coffee shop baristas who have unionized as resources has been essential. And he said the highly visible Starbucks campaign has also helped, because seeing workers with some of the best benefits in the industry still rightly insist that they deserve better is inspiring. LinkedIn, very popular site for employers and employees, has reached a conciliation agreement with the Department of Labor to pay $1.8 million in back pay with interest to female employees who were paid far less than their male colleagues. A Department of Labor investigation found out that LinkedIn, as part of a routine evaluation pursuant to Executive Order 1965, which requires that federal government contractors provide equal opportunity to employees. It comes after Google reached a $3.8 million settlement with the department. That was last year, after the company discriminated against female and Asian American candidates and employees. Can't do that. Just can't do that. Liz Schuler, president of the National AFL-CIO, is commenting about the organizing that's going on. And she said, it is a thrilling time to be part of our labor movement. And we're ready to meet this moment. Workers across the country are leading a wave of organizing like we have not seen in decades. I felt the energy in person when I met with workers this week who just won their union election at a Starbucks cafe, and new members of UFCW Local 360's cannabis division in New Jersey. Together, they're showing all of us what it means to win in solidarity. Working people allow multi-billion dollar corporations like Starbucks and Amazon grow and thrive. And America's workers have the right to come together and create real change on the job. Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. Got a strike action taking place in Racine, Wisconsin, and Burlington, Iowa today. More than 1,000 UAW members at Case New Holland industrial locations in those two cities set up picket lines on Monday as their demand for the agriculture equipment company to offer a fair contract went unheeded. Just didn't listen to them. Strike began, as I pointed out, on Monday after the company failed to present an agreement that met its workers' needs. Comment here from Ray Curry. Ray is the president of the United Auto Workers, and he said, our members have worked through the pandemic after the company deemed them essential to produce the equipment that feeds America, builds America, and powers America's economy. They are a strong, united union voice on the picket line, and they can make a difference for working families here and throughout the country. That's Ray Curry, president of the AFL-CIO. If you get an opportunity, go to the homepage of the AFL-CIO, and I mentioned this on the show yesterday. A lot of people, rightly so, upset about inflation in America. And again, especially with the political divide, it's all Biden's fault, right? Well, you got to look a little deeper. And if you go to the national website, you can download a flyer and you can even take a survey. They'd like you to chime in on this. Why costs are going up and how to fix it. We're going to talk more about this with Fred Redmond tomorrow. Fred is the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, and it's our first Friday with Fred. So costs are going up for various reasons, like disrupted supply chains, manufacturing overseas. You know, we got rid of all the jobs. The jobs are in China. It's hard to get the products from China here because of the supply chains. Then you throw in corporate greed. Well, how do you fix it? Upgrade the infrastructure. That's about to happen. Get those jobs back to America. American manufacturing made in the USA, and raise the wages to keep up with the inflation. Real simple. AFLCIO.org, and you can take that member survey, just /member survey, and check that out and chime in on what's going on in America and the entire world. I mean, we're not the only ones dealing with inflation right now. Let's make sure you know that. All right, we have to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to check in with the president of the Minnesota State Labor Federation.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. And speaking of teachers, let's go to line number one. And joining us on our live line today is Bernie Burnham. And Bernie is the president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. She became president on the 1st of February this year, and she has a solid union background in education, I might add, as well as the governor of Minnesota. We certainly do like that. Bernie Burnham, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. How are we doing today?
I'm doing great, and I'm happy to be here with you. Thank you.
And you have an interesting background. You are the second woman, I'm reading, that is leading the Federation, but the first woman of color. That had to be challenging for you, but from what I was reading before, unions kind of helped you out on that. Can we reflect back in that, at that time, Bernie, as far as of you being a woman of color and how you had to rise above the ranks? Talk to me about that.
Well, sure. I mean, this goes way back to, before I even became a teacher. I just did a lot of volunteering in the school that my children attended and eventually was encouraged to become a teacher by an assistant principal at their elementary school. So went and got my degree in teaching and started at age 40 as a classroom teacher. When you come into the classroom at 40, it's different than coming into the classroom at 24. So I quickly became engaged with our union, our local union in Duluth, Minnesota, and became a union steward, which I, in my building that I taught in, did that for a number of years. In Duluth, we were fortunate enough to have a great labor management system that was put into place shortly after I began teaching. So I was asked to be a part of that. Which I said yes to, of course. I always thought it was better to have a seat at the table and hear what's going on than, having to hear all the information secondhand. So after I did that for a while, I decided I wanted to run for the executive board of the Duluth Federation of Teachers and get a seat there. Eventually, our president that was serving for us, who had been the president for 34 years, decided he was going to retire. And so in conversation had with our whole executive board, I just kind of decided for me that was going to be the next best step to run to be president. And it worked out very well for me and for our union, and I think for a lot of the labor movement in Duluth as a whole. And it really showed me how important it was that teachers were a part of the labor movement. And it was something I actually had to teach my colleagues because they hadn't really been paying attention to that, and we were lucky to have a good, strong central labor body as part of the Northeast Area Labor Council in Minnesota, who helped us turn over a school board when we needed to and find folks to help us, get what we needed as educators and also for our communities and for our children. And we also were able to pass a couple of referendums. You know, districts are always having to go searching for money these days because schools are not fully funded. So we were lucky to have them help us with that. In turn, we helped them elect, you know, labor-friendly officials at the local, state, and federal level.
Making a difference. So you had a lot of people around you to guide you all the way up the ladder as president of the Minnesota State Federation. And we've checked in with a lot of federations. And it's refreshing to hear what you just told our audience, because when we talk to the folks like in North Carolina, oh my God, Texas is another one. They don't have that kind of labor cooperation. Unions are a dirty word in some of those states. But in Minnesota, pretty union friendly. And now your governor, Tim Walz, he comes from an education background, right?
He sure does. He was a high school teacher, taught social studies for many years before he became involved in politics. As you know, he was a congressman for the state of Minnesota for a number of years. That's where I first met him, actually, when I was out there lobbying with Education Minnesota in Washington, D.C., and then he decided to run for governor. And we're happy to have him. We're thrilled that he's our governor. We call him the educator governor, and he's a positive voice, and not only education, but he certainly works well with labor and fights for what our folks need.
Now, what's the status there? Is he up for re-election right now? Maybe we can get into some of the politics, and maybe you could speak about the legislature, because I know there's a little bit of pushback. You know, it's never a straight line. You know that, Bernie. Talk to me about that part.
You're right about that. Tim is up for election, and we are happy to support him in that. Our House works with the governor, but we have a Senate that is Republican-led, and they often give a lot of pushback and slow things down. Here, you know, we fought for bonus pay for essential workers who got us through the pandemic, and initially, the governor had put into his budget proposal a $1,500 checks for each worker, which we completely supported, obviously, and the Democratic-controlled House passed it. Like I said just a second ago, the barrier was the Senate, and they just didn't want to do that, thought it was too much money. But eventually here in the last week, the governor and the House and Senate worked out a deal and were able to get half of that amount, so $750 checks going out to our frontline essential workers, which, you know, we fought to make that higher, but you know how everything is. You got to come to deals and strike a balance and things, but glad to always support the governor. But, he has a road ahead of him. We're hopeful, and I think that he'll be fine. We need him here.
Now, with that reduction, you pushed for 15, got 750. Are you going to do a campaign saying, hey, look, we tried to get you 15, but those Republicans in the Senate cut it in half? You ever think of going down that road to kind of call them out on all of this?
Well, you know, we're going to make sure that folks know who was responsible for that reduction. Absolutely. I think, you know, it was interesting just having those conversations and going through all of the details of the deal and trying to understand why on earth it would be half. But, you know, it was either half or it could potentially gone to zero, right, if we hadn't made that deal and the governor hadn't done the work that he had done, and the Speaker of the House Melissa Hortman, if she hadn't worked as hard as she had, we could have completely, you know, not had any money. So some, unfortunately, is better than zero, but we will definitely, folks will know who the culprit was there.
Well, we're talking about essential workers, those on the front line, and, obviously grocery workers are part of that because the grocery stores were open. The trades had to work, too. I mean, we had to keep the building going on all that. Do we have any idea how many workers will be covered by this in the state of Minnesota, that $750 check?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know the final number, but, you know, initially they were going to kind of pick and choose, but there will be an application process that folks go through so that they can get their check. And that's what we're in the process of doing now, is making sure that people are aware of how to do that. So I'm not sure the final numbers. Yeah, I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay, that's not a problem. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of people, no doubt about it. It's a pretty big state, the state of Minnesota.
Right.
Any other issues in your legislature you want to call attention to right now? Because there's a lot of, like right to work. I can speak for the state of Ohio. We record the show in the state of Ohio. There's always one or two lawmakers. It never gets anywhere. It usually dies in committee. But, we got to go right to work. Why? Because the states around us are right to work. Oh, we got to attack prevailing wage. Why? Because the states around us are attacking prevailing wage. Any of that happening in Minnesota, Bernie?
Well, there's always a rumble of it. And we always, like you say, in Ohio, here in Minnesota, we fight that back and push it back. But that's another reason why it's so important for us to get Governor Walz reelected and, to keep our House. And we would certainly love to turn the Senate so that we could have, all three arms working together. But that threat is always hanging out there. Other things that we have been fighting against is, wage theft and trying to make sure that folks who hire people actually pay them their wages and don't, keep them from making the money that they earn and that they deserve. So that's an issue that we fight for all the time. We fight for paid family medical leave. That's something that is, it seems like a given, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in our Senate, they, for some reason, don't seem to think that's a good idea. So it's they're the battles that we fight all the time. And, I obviously fully funding education is another big one here in the state of Minnesota. There's plenty of money here in our state.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that everybody's, fighting for nickels and dimes is ridiculous. Plus, we have that big surplus right now. We have a $9 billion surplus. And the Senate doesn't seem to want to, spend the money. They were happy getting the unemployment insurance taken care of and covered to the tune of $2.7 billion. But then, like I said, everything else seems to be just kind of nitpicked at. So doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people in Minnesota and their labor movement. But we will continue to fight those battles and work with our present governor and keep him in his seat.
A $9 billion surplus in the state budget. Bernie, I got to take a break. Could we talk about that in our next segment here on the show?
Absolutely.
Very good. Bernie Burnham joining us on our live line. She is president of the Minnesota Labor Federation. Later in the show, we'll be checking in with Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
American workers are the best in the world, but we face an uphill battle against countries like China that don't play by the rules. There's a bill right now in Congress that would give American workers the trade tools we need to fight back and win. Join me in telling Congress to pass this bill. Visit AmericanManufacturing.org to learn how.
Paid for by the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, on line number one, our live line today, we are speaking with Bernie Burnham. Bernie is president. She became president on February 1st of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. I forgot to mention the website, mnaflcio.org, mnaflcio.org. Minnesota, pretty union-friendly state, and a state with a lot of money. Okay, $9 billion in the coffers. How did that happen, Bernie? There's a lot of states struggling. We're still in this pandemic. I got to know that story. What is that story?
Well, that's a good question here. Honestly, I have to tell you, I would have to research a little more. So I think I might need to get back to you, Locke, on that. I think, you know, it's just as I'm kind of scanning through here. It says it's been driven in large part by the increased earnings of its residents and corporations. Projected state revenue of all kinds has grown by roughly $6.4 billion since last summer when the Minnesota legislature approved the current two-year $52 million budget. So state entered the biennium with a healthy savings account of more than $6.2 billion, and the anticipated surplus includes about $3.4 billion in added income taxes and $1.3 billion more in corporate taxes as compared to the past. So we're sitting pretty healthy here, and again, we're not understanding why we're nickel and diming everybody in our Senate offices. So,
yeah. That's amazing that you have that amount of money, and the very fact, like you pointed out, that they're still kind of chintzy as far as distributing some of that to people. I mean, come on, this is a lot of tax revenue that obviously went into the state coffers on this. How are you doing as far as attracting businesses and all that? And I also want to talk about organizing. I understand that, just like in all of America right now, organizing, there is a big uptick in organizing, but let's talk about businesses and organizing those businesses. How do we look in Minnesota?
Well, things are looking great, right? I mean, you know, now is the time for unions to be organizing and for unions, folks to be organizing and become union members. We've had a lot of action here in Minnesota between, Starbucks workers. We had the first Starbucks store vote to unionize last week. And we've got some bookstore workers at Half Price Books. Brewery and distillery workers and many others are wanting to go union. People are just tired of not working in safe environments. They're tired of not having, you know, good benefits and real wages, especially when we look at, you know, how corporations have made a ton of money throughout the pandemic and you know, the top 10% have made the most money, and then the bottom 90% obviously the least. So those numbers are skewed, and it shouldn't look that way. So people are looking again for, you know, really going to work and getting what they deserve and what they've earned.
Yeah, in the last 6 months, union activity, according to the National Labor Relations Board, picked up like 57%. It's just astronomical. And you got a union-friendly in the White House, union-friendly guy in the White House. You got the NLRB. You got Jennifer Abruzzo there, who is just opening the door for more union activity. It's good to hear. Good to hear. I want to talk about the program, and this is something that New Jersey excelled on, and you, I know, kind of modeled your program after that, and that is to groom union brothers and sisters. And you know this. You could speak to this because you were a teacher, and now you're the head of the Labor Federation over there. So what? Maybe you can unwind this for me. And I know it's been a couple of years, and you've had good results. Can we get into that?
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, New Jersey is the model, and so we have a program similar to that here that we model after theirs. We have been encouraging union member candidates to step up to be candidates to run for office. And since 2020, we've had a couple of school board seats and a city council seat that are, you know, have union members in place. And so beyond our program, I know there are other places where their union members are encouraged to run for seats, and we're fortunate when we get them in. But our folks do a great job in training, and it is ongoing. So we're always asking our affiliates and, you know, our brothers and sisters to consider running for office. And our team as I said, does a great job in making sure that they're ready to go.
I know the AFL-CIO has like a toolkit that kind of guides union members through the political process. Are you familiar with that?
I know a little bit about it because actually I sat in on that book prior to becoming the president of our federation. I was asked by the team to actually speak to the group who was in training, and so talked about the importance of being part of labor and making sure that we have the voices at the table who are going to support and encourage goodwill with labor in our state. So I think, you know, all the pieces that are in place are great, and they just take them through step by step from the very beginning. You know, what made you think about it, and what are the assets that you bring, and, you know, how do you speak, and how do you approach people and network and all of those pieces. So I think it's a great program.
Now, the people that are success stories, like your governor, like yourself, do you go out and say, hey, you know what, this program really works, you ought to give it a shot here? Does that happen?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, the folks that we've had who have been through our program since 2020 are sitting in the places they should be, and they are able to support, especially, from my own personal experience on the school board, we usually, when we have someone that we encourage who's a union member to run and sit in the seat or is labor-friendly, it's helpful. You know, I mean, look, it just, you know, passed some referendums and helped us with my own local in Duluth get decent contracts for our educators.
Teachers are doing okay in the state of Minnesota then with those contracts?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, there's always places, like every state, we've got some areas that aren't as teacher-friendly, but for the most part, in the state of Minnesota, teachers do okay.
I have to ask you about vouchers, and you know this is a national push, especially by the conservative groups, and there are many of them out there right now. We see a lot of that in the state of Ohio, charter schools that shouldn't even be in operation, some of them raided by the FBI. What's the status in the state of Minnesota, Bernie?
Well, you know, we push back on vouchers all the time. We like you, have some charter schools, a number of them. I mean, you know, Minnesota is the place where they open the door for charter schools, unfortunately. I know occasionally there's people who want to push for vouchers and in the name of, you know, making things better for children of color, which is not true. We know that vouchers just make the system weaker, where the money should be going for public schools and making sure that all children have an equal opportunity and get an equitable education.
Bernie, I'm reading here that the Minnesota AFL-CIO represents more than 300,000 working men and women. I'm just wondering here, with all the organizing going on, do you have any target in mind? Do you have any? I mean, you just took over a couple of months ago, beginning of February. There's got to be some goals that you have in your toolbox of where you like to see that number. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. Would love to see the number rise. You know, at the moment, I'm not sure what it's like in other states, but I know here with the last couple of years with the pandemic and, of course, with all the racial strife that we've had in Minnesota, there's been some divide among our affiliates. And my goal right now is to work to bring people back to the table and to have people have conversations with one another. You know, our labor leaders, everybody's concerned about their own members, which makes sense completely, right? But I think we've lost some sense of unity, and that's really something I've been working hard on in my first few months, just getting out, listening to leaders, those who are affiliated and some who have left the table, and just asking, you know, why and how can we bring you back? So what we're doing, starting here in another couple of weeks, we're going to set up some small group conversations where we just want people to listen to each other for the first time in a long time. You know, the pandemic, we were lucky enough to find Zoom. I think everybody was happy to have that because we still had the ability to meet. However, it didn't enable us to have the real good, solid conversations and really hear each other. So that's our goal right now. Solidarity is one of our big goals in our strategic plan, and we intend to work to increase it and to make it the way we work here.
Yeah, yeah. Talk your way to solidarity. I like that. That's a great idea. Bernie Burnham joining us on our live line, the 10th president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, second woman and first woman of color. In closing here, Bernie, and I really appreciate this conversation. I'd like to do this again, maybe 6 to 8 months down the road, and see how, you know, after the politics in November, we'll see what happens there. There's going to be some changes in America. We all know that because of the political divide. But any advice that you can give? We have a national audience. You heard me mention we're on at least 6 platforms right now, and for a woman of color, especially in having a leadership position that you have. Can you give our audience some advice? Because you know the challenges that are out there. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that in our closing today.
Well, sure. I think I take a lot of the pieces of the work that I do from just being a teacher. Like I said, I was in the classroom for about 15 years, and it took me a little time. But I think the most important thing we can do is listen to one another and really hear what people have to say. You know, we don't have to agree with each other. We would love that if that was the case, but we know that's not a given. But I think just listening to hear what people have to say, not listening to respond, that's the biggest problem I see these days. You know, we are all tapped into technology all the time. I mean, you know yourself, you're sitting in a meeting and people are still doing work on their phones and that kind of thing. So I don't know that people are 100% present. So for me, as I've started this role, that's been important to me, and I have gone to, boy, I've done a lot of meetings with folks, and really I just walk in the room and say, tell me what you want our Minnesota AFL-CIO to look like. You know, we've got a strategic plan, we have goals, but what is it you expect, and what do you want, and what do you think we need to do? So do a lot of listening, and that's where our conversations are coming from. People have told me they didn't feel heard, they didn't feel valued at the table. So our goal is to make sure that happens.
Certainly good advice. Bernie Burnham joining us on our live line. I really appreciate what you said. I've got 3 teachers in my family, so I have so much respect for teachers. Bernie Burnham on our live line, president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. Website is mnaflcio.org. And they also have a Facebook page, and you could follow Bernie on Twitter, Bernie Burnham 4. Bernie Burnham 4 is her Twitter handle. Thank you so much, Bernie. Keep up the fight over there in Minnesota, and please keep in touch, all right?
You got it. Look forward to talking soon.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Senator Sherrod Brown.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. We're in a holding pattern here for Senator Sherrod Brown. In the meantime, I want to share with you a story about what is happening in America with regard to union organizing. Pretty much, unions are returning to old school organizing. We've talked so much on this show about this new wave of union activism that's sweeping the country, like Starbucks, Amazon, even Apple. The unions claim it's because of a grassroots fervor for economic justice, but there is another factor at work. And you know what that is? The labor movement has gotten smarter. Yeah, that's pretty much it. For years, unions mounted aggressive campaigns to pressure corporations into unionizing their workforces. And they failed. You know why? Because they were top-down efforts that lacked actual grassroots support from workers. So, unions are now reverting to older forms of grassroots organizing that, while slower, are better at building that grassroots support. Recent union successes have been numerous, but piecemeal. Starbucks being organized one cafe at a time. Some places boasting as few as a dozen workers. And here's what's going on. The unions appear to be using what are called SALTs. This is an old practice where labor activists apply for a job at a targeted company, then they try to work from the inside to build union support. The National Labor Relations Act prohibits companies from firing workers for union-related activity, thus protecting the union activists. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot of workers that get fired. Eventually, they'll get their job back, but it takes years to get that justice to happen. But I remember reading statistics, 1 out of 4 union activists usually get fired for trying to organize. A story in the Progressive Journal Labor Notes highlighted Staten Island Amazon worker Tabitha Wilson, who was part of SEIU's fast food workers campaign when she worked at McDonald's. Now, SEIU tried the top-down approach, and guess what? It did not work. So the grassroots is working. And keep in mind, we're in a very tight labor market right now. So that is helping drive up wages and benefits. So that allows workers to say, you know what? You want me? You got to pay more. And by the way, we want a union. That's what's happening in America right now. All right. I believe we have Senator Sherrod Brown on line number 2. Senator, welcome to America's Workforce.
Good to be back again once a month forever.
Senator, you were in Lorain, Ohio this week, Monday to be specific, and there were a lot of labor folks there, including Tim Berga and also the individual that's trying to drive this deal there, a dry dock for a submarine and ship repair. And I heard it was very well attended. I have to ask you the question, and I was told months ago that this was very close to the finish line. I'm just wondering, what needs to be done to get it across the finish line? What are you hearing in Washington about this?
Yeah, these are, I would not say it's close to the finish line. I mean, this is something we've worked on for some time. It's complicated. It's got to do with Department of Defense and contractors. And I look at the history of Lorain. And what, first of all, we know how to make things in Lorain and always have shipbuilding. Actually, the first shipbuilder in Lorain, I believe, was almost 200 years ago, believe it or not. So, and we've had big shipbuilding companies there and a major port in the Great Lakes, all of that. So we're equipped to do it. It's just we got to change the thinking of some people around the country, private sector and Defense Department and shipbuilders and all, because we haven't. You know, people look to the coast when they look to this. So we are changing people's minds. I'm hopeful, but it's not close to being decided, but we keep working towards it.
Okay, well, at least we're getting an answer as far as how far away we are. So I have to ask you one more thing. Are there any other bids on this? You mentioned the coast. Are they trying to get this operation going?
Well, they're always there. I don't think there are specific bids, but they, you know, because they've had a more recent big history of doing this, and that's where the decision makers, where the Department of Defense looks first. We've gotten their attention now to look at Lorain, and that's the big step here. And in that way, we've succeeded so far.
Yeah, and you know that area has been devastated. I mean, U.S. Steel had a presence there. American Shipbuilding, you remember George Steinbrenner's operation was there years ago. There was Ford Motors had a plant there, and then we have to add in Lordstown because that would also be would benefit as a result of this. Okay, let's move on to the VA here, and it's my understanding you hosted a roundtable discussion. We've been on this issue for quite some time. One of our sponsors is the American Federation of Government Employees, and they're trying to weigh in on this. So is this Chillicothe VA hospital, are they going to close down then or what?
There is a plan to do that that we are fighting hard against. This started a decade ago, more actually about 15 years ago, when the far right, the anti-labor Tea Party, began to push to privatize the VA. They don't believe in government role in housing and healthcare and education. I mean, privatization of Social Security, privatization of Medicare, it's their across-the-board plan. They've tried to do that with the VA. They've had some success as more and more VA services have been farmed out to the community. In part, when VA can't do something that's particularly complicated and unusual, or when the VA is overloaded, sometimes you need a private carrier, a private physician, a private hospital, a not-for-profit private hospital. So that's okay to a point. But then the Trump administration began the process of closing this hospital. I had the secretary, it wasn't just a roundtable, I had the secretary of the VA from about 9 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. We were in Chillicothe, and then the last hour we were in Columbus at a vet center there. On mental health issues for vets. So he knows all about it. I've asked, I'm on the Veterans Committee. For 15 years I've been, I ask him in hearings. I've talked to him on the phone. I've had him in Chillicothe. We're leading the fight. Tim Ryan and Nan Whaley are helping on this to stop the privatization of the VA generally, and specifically to stop the closure of Chillicothe.
And we don't want to leave the vets out in the cold here. And, you know, that's not a real populated area. They're going to have to travel far to get services, don't you think?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They already do have to travel a distance. I mean, that's what happens when you live in sparsely populated areas. But that hospital will be 100 years old, I believe, in 2 years. I think it's 98 years old now. And it matters to people's lives. And a couple of things. You know, one flash is that when people agree to serve us in the Marines or in the Army or in the Navy or in the Air Force or in the Guard, Coast Guard, if they agree to serve us, we agree to serve them. And that's a lifelong commitment. The other thing, veterans feel better. The great majority of veterans want to get their care where it's being given to them. You mentioned AFGE. Many of the AFGE employees are veterans themselves. And they mm-hmm. get a special care. They also, if they've been afflicted, exposed to burn pits, and they get an illness from that, the VA knows how to treat those kinds of war-related illnesses and injuries because that's what they do. You know, in the private sector, as good as UH or the clinic is, and I think that that our public hospital, Metro, is just one of the best in the country. They could take care of veterans fine, but they don't have the intimacy that Wade Park does in Cleveland, or that the VA hospital in Dayton does. And that's why this is so important. It's symbolism, and it's way, way more than that.
Very important. All right. I know you got to run. Any thoughts on the primaries this week?
We don't need another person in the U.S. Senate who is at the beck and call of California high-tech billionaires, and that's what J.D. Vance will be. I mean, we've got two candidates who grew up as working class, in working class families, Tim in Youngstown. Nan Whaley's been in Dayton for years, but grew up just across the line, Indiana. And they both struggled. Their families struggled growing up, and they understand working class issues. And on the other side, you got two gazillionaires, DeWine and Vance, who have, Vance has basically thought he could buy his way into everything. And the contrast is really clear. Who's going to fight for workers? Who's going to put workers at the center of our policies in Ohio and in the Senate?
Amen to that. Senator, thank you so much, and we'll talk with you next month, okay?
Good deal. Thanks, Flash. Thanks, buddy.
Senator Sherrod Brown on our live line. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Central Ohio Building Trades, and it's our first Friday with Fred Redman of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.